under our rate.
Yeah, I would think so, yeah. Then I think, Mr. Chairman, the other question we ought to recognize here, and I'm sure you do, is that this statute as drafted would remove the first cousins. Isn't that right?
Right.
No.
I think that's reasonable.
It's good or bad, I don't know.
Well, I think these things are... I don't really think society today would frown on it. Do you?
Well, no, unless the genetic aspect of it. More, have you got any recent updating on whether we're talking about idiots again, or...?
Well, it's, you know, an open question. The Model Penal Code commentary discussed it. There's two sides to the question. Some scientists, anthropologists, feel that it could have some harmful effects, particularly in the first generation, while others feel that while you might have some problems in the first generation, this would be offset with gains in the second and third generation by dominant genes, then overcompensating for whatever regressive genes, the harm any regressive genes have done in the first generation. Of course, there have been no real studies made because you don't have the opportunity to do field work. I read an interesting book years ago about a study made in the Appalachian area, which would indicate that there might be some danger in...
inbreeding.
Long-term inbreeding, which has been done in some of the mountain areas of Kentucky and West Virginia. It may produce some rather strange...
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Ken, are you feeling?
No.
That's all right. Keep it saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Now we've got to remember that we've passed three, haven't touched two, let's go to four.
Number three. Pass. Oh.
For concealing the birth of an infant. A person commits a crime of concealing the birth of an infant if he conceals the corpse of a newborn child with intent to conceal the fact of its birth or to prevent a determination of whether it was born dead or alive. This is a restatement of ORS 163-660, except it's been broadened somewhat. The present statute is limited to unmarried women. This statute would cover both married and unmarried women. And this statute would also cover a third party who concealed the birth other than the mother.
Any problems with that one?
Nope.
Let's go on to six.
Well, wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
What's this trying to get at?
Ones who have a child and bury it in the woods.
Well, the criminal homicide article defines a human being as a person who's been born, was alive at the time of the homicide. With the decomposed fetus, there's no way to determine whether it was born dead or alive. So you therefore can't, say for example, make a manslaughter charge, where you could bring a charge under Section 4 without showing whether the child was born dead or alive. Like, I think there was a child found here in Oregon just the other day behind a nursing home. A newborn child.
There was one found recently in the woods. They turned it in, they went back and found the child still alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The guy thought it was dead.
Yeah, how would you get that on an abandonment charge, right? It's impossible to determine the child was born alive.
What's the punishment for the crime of concealing the birth of an infant?
Well, it's a misdemeanor now. Oh. Apparently, it was originally directed at illegitimate births. I think was the original intent of the legislature this area.
Well, I was wondering whether it just kind of someone directed at abortion.
Well,
Well, I suppose you could have an abortion situation. But of course, newborn. Now, does 163.660 use that terminology, newborn child, or?
Well, now wait a minute. Suppose you find them. All right, you come across a corpse.
No, uses the language any issue of her body.
What?
The present statute uses the language any issue of her body.
All right, but suppose you police discover a corpse and you track down the person to it. All right, you can't tell whether the child was born or unborn, so you're not going to prosecute him for murder or manslaughter under any circumstances then.
Of course, our present statute is only directed at bastard children because it only refers to unmarried women, and it has a subsection uses the term bastard infant. A woman is indicted for the murder of her bastard infant. She may be charged in the same indictment with the crime defined in this section. If she's found not guilty of murder, she can still be found guilty under this.
What's the penalty, though? This is a misdemeanor?
Yeah. Is there any crime? Is there a crime now for giving birth to a child not without reporting it?
Like give birth at home and not report it?
Yeah. I think we're still covered here, but what I was thinking about, we're making it a crime to conceal the birth of an infant. By concealing, you're not talking about, you know, put under a bushel basket type of thing. You're talking about, I presume you're talking about not informing the authorities. It's a question whether it's a passive or an active act. But the woman in Scotts Mills gives birth to a child in her own home, and the child is alive.
I don't think we have
seen the birth of an infant.
There's no criminal statute.
Okay, then the child dies. Has he committed a crime if he then buries the child, or stillborn even?
Well, if it was
he hasn't, unless he's done it with the intent conceal the fact of its birth or prevent a determination of whether it was born dead or alive. The state would have to prove that, wouldn't it?
I think this type of statute is really only directed at infants born dead, not born alive.
Why are we making this too
broad?
Because
once a child is born alive, all different sorts of liabilities would attach.
Well, for instance, the way it reads now, it requires the child to die. Doesn't affect.
Yeah. The term conceals children. The corpse of a newborn child implies the child is born dead.
No, implies that the child is dead.
Or the child is dead, born alive, or born stillborn, but the child is dead. While still newborn.
Well, if the child's born alive, you do have a duty to report any death of a human being.
Then what do you need this statute for?
If they're born dead.
They're not born alive.
Well, if the child is born dead, then why should it be a crime?
To conceal it.
I think this is really residual.
It's a residual on abortion.
You get out those situations where it cannot be determined whether it was born dead or alive.
Well, but you have statutes that presently require you to report a death. And isn't that sufficient?
In other words, like one of these children found dead,
why should it
appear to be stillborn?
Why should we confine it to children anyway? I mean, you should probably report all deaths.
Well, that's what I was wondering. If there's a statutory requirement to report a birth and a statutory requirement to report a death.
I assume it's a misdemeanor.
Then what do we get at here? Unless it's purely we've proven additionally in failure to report the death or report the birth, attempt to hide evidence, so to speak, conceal evidence.
Well, I think it relates to abortion, is what I think.
That's what I suspect.
Well, it could be because of the language, any issue of her body. And of course, that could be the result of an abortion, an issue. Well, you're not talking about a born infant. I was just checking the health code here to see what the requirements were on recording births as well as deaths. There are some requirements in there, I know, but I'm not so sure that there are any that are directed at private citizens, other than, you know, I mean, there are some directed at certain officials and what they have to do, and what physicians have to do. Certificate of every birth shall be filed, local registrar, by either the physician or midwife in attendance at the birth, or if not so attended by one of the parents. The mother is unmarried, the certificate shall not show the name. So you have to report the birth. You have to report the birth. And that carries a...
But if it's born dead, I still think the only hole is the stillborn, which is the aborted fetus or the stillborn.
Then you could get into a real hassle as to at what stage. I mean, 2 weeks, 2 months, 4 months.
Chapter 432, Max, is where this is. You don't need to get it, so you know.
I'm kind of trying to go along with Lee, unless...
I don't see what this thing can do at all.
Yeah. Unless it's...
No, I didn't.
Couldn't we get somebody... Didn't we get one on...
Mr. Chairman, I moved to strike it with a corresponding motion that the staff check to see what the recordings are. Required reporting term for death.
Well, that's in chapter, ORS chapter 146, death requiring investigation.
Yeah, but those are the violent deaths. That's investigation, not reporting. Now, with the traffic deaths and...
Yeah, that's violent, yeah.
That's
violent.
That's the DA's job.
And a fetal death, you have a requirement in 432.307 for a fetal death certificate shall be prepared and filed.
Wouldn't somebody be guilty of filing that? Would that be a crime then if you... What I'm saying is, about the only people we're picking up here is the one that doesn't have the responsibility under the death of the birth statute, one who assists and does it, really. The husband, maybe, or something?
Well, it seems to me this is an administrative matter, and it shouldn't be. If the Board of Health, if it isn't required to be reported, the Board of Health certainly should be reported, and that's all it should be.
If they'll report, then they're going to be charged with a misdemeanor to better report the death.
Well, under 146, you have to...
How about this thing we got in that code room? It's almost some shocking case.
Report the death of anyone who's found dead who is not under the care of a physician. Of course, if they're under the care of a physician, the physician is bound to report the death. So that seems to cover all deaths.
Yeah.
So moved.
Okay, any further discussion? All those in favor, and keep by saying aye.
Aye.
All right, those opposed, nay. Carry. Okay.
Section 5, abandonment of a child. Person commits a crime of abandonment of a child if being a parent, lawful guardian, or other person lawfully charged with the care or custody of a child less than 14 years of age, he deserts the child in any place with intent to wholly abandon it. And if a parent, guardian, or other person charged with care or custody of a child leaves the state and refuses or neglects for a period of 60 days to provide support for the child, it shall be prima facie evidence that he has wholly abandoned the child. This section contains some of the elements presently found in our non-support statute. In other words, our present non-support statute includes both non-support and abandonment.
Does this replace the non-support?
No.
No, we'd still have another section
coming up, criminal mode.
On non-support itself.
Why 14? You've invited our comments by putting it in bracket.
Well, because I don't have personally.
You've used 18 and 16 before, so it's time to use it.
Just seems to me, I suppose the criterion should be an age when a child is reasonably able to take care of himself. Not necessarily legally.
You mean if I had a 15-year-old girl and I was down in California and she and I had a fight and I said, get out of the car, and I drove off, but as long as she's a year over 14 then I abandoned her, I've committed no crime?
Not under this section. No, you wouldn't.
Although if I fail to support her, then I don't send her a check.
Right.
The next 4 years, all I have to do is send her money.
As a matter of fact, New York uses the age of 8.
I'd like to hear him defend that one.
Well, I think.
Well, on the other hand, you have the 16-year-old kid that runs out of the family and screams at my dad.
Yeah, but this is couched in very definite terms. He deserts the child in any place with the intent to wholly abandon. All the father has to say is, hell, the kid ran out. I didn't desert him. He deserted me, and I don't have the intent to abandon him.
I'll try 50, man. I'll go 60.
Why? I realize we're arguing our arbitrary figures, but why?
I don't know.
Why shouldn't this be synonymous or at least the same age as the support stage? I think it's, if I have no duty, if I am permitted to abandon, then why should I be permitted to support? I mean, it would seem to me that either get rid of the whole thing and nail it on support, or make this conform to the support statute. Don has been using there. What's your thought?
18 is the present age.
Yeah, 18 is the present age for the non-support statute. And ordinarily, you charge them with non-support, although the statute is broad enough to take care of an abandonment situation where, you know, leaving the kid by the highway or
the
on
bus
the
road. Yeah,
that sort of thing. And I know that.
Suppose
that
it's a 16-year-old kid who's a mentally retarded.
Okay. We're supposing that, then what?
We just feel you might want a higher age for
something. I
want
to hang the guy.
Yeah, well, you know, this has all the aspects of putting a kid in a sack, you know, like the kitten bit. I mean, we're talking about...
I think 14 is too young.
We're talking about overt, intentional, active, leaving a kid in a corner. We're not talking about... we're talking about rather extraordinary circumstances, because the state would have to prove that he deserts the child in a place with the intent to wholly abandon it.
Now, I beg your pardon, New York has 14 years and 16 for non-support. It's Michigan that has 8.
Yeah, Michigan has 8, and we talked about this back at the seminar this summer, and one of our workshop sessions, and Michigan finally ended up with 2 separate statutes, and what they were trying to get at, they felt that they should have a statute that would take care of the waif situation, the little kid that's just abandoned someplace by its parent. But they felt that it wasn't as serious if as the child got older. It was a different matter than mere non-support. Just going off and leaving a little child someplace should be prohibited by law. So they had a statute which they made a misdemeanor to take care of the abandonment situation, and they decided on the age 8. And they felt if the kid was older than 8, that for some reason it wasn't serious because he was more likely to be able to get help for himself, or at least, you know, find aid and otherwise wasn't as heinous a situation.
Course, this is written, if you pick the 8, you can leave a child of 7 and down, and that becomes a crime. You leave a child of 8 and 9, and that's okay, because that's what the statute says. If they really meant what they said, it would seem to me that they would have said 7 and younger is a second degree crime, and up to some age of rationality, because I think I certainly wouldn't want to argue that a 9-year-old girl in New York City or in Detroit or Flint or some of those neat towns they got in Michigan is capable of being abandoned and does not qualify as a waif. I think she's perhaps more vulnerable than the 3 and 4-year-old.
Well, I would agree with that. I think that's too young. Yeah, I think, but they were trying to get at two different concepts here. One was leaving the child, and the other was a persistent non-support situation where you had a period of time without adequate support for the child. And then you raised the age, but you made it more difficult to prove the crime. But it was a more serious crime in the long run, the persistent non-support.
What's the difference in the penalty between the crime of abandonment and non-support?
There isn't any now.
There isn't any difference.
Yeah, but you don't have any crime. You're not making any crime. You're not making it a crime for the guy who abandons the child who's 16. You're saying that as long as he provides support, and which is defined as
well, that's what I'm saying. If we enact this as it is right now,
support,
exactly right. I could leave the kid at the street corner.
All you have to do is provide, make sure he's got shelter, food, clothing, medical attention, and education.
All right, now, so here's...
So I can take my kid to Wally Carson and say, or take my kid out here to, look, I'm going to pay you so much a month to take care of this, and I'm leaving this kid. I can't stand him anymore.
Well, of course, you'd have, I mean, it'd be the case, we're torturing the facts, but I just don't see any reason why this shouldn't be the same as the support. I grant you the two different crimes, but it's inconceivable to me to conjure up a fact situation that isn't so awkwardly strained, where you'd have, I can see very easily where you'd have failure to support without being able to prove that a guy abandoned the child. He just, in fact, wasn't supporting him. He really intended to come back, or he left. Lee Johnson left the kids with Wally Carson.
Well, shouldn't there be an obligation, a legal obligation? You have more than a duty to just financially support a kid that's 16 years old.
Well, certainly.
What I'm saying is I come down and I say, look, I'll pay you $1,000 a month. I think that'll be two different crimes.
Well, I wouldn't want to make it a crime for a person to, say, take their child to their aunt or their uncle and say, I'm sick of this 16-year-old, you can have him, I can't handle him, and I'll pay you $100 a month and you raise him. I don't think that should be a crime if the brother is willing to raise a kid.
If the intent is to wholly abandon the child...
That's what you tell your sister, I want to wholly abandon
him. All right, but the way you have this one, if the kid's 13, that's a crime. The kid's 14 is a crime. Now, I realize we're mincing words here and the difference between 13 and 14, but fact is, it's still a small child, and I don't think it makes a doggone bit of difference.
I'm not so sure, though, that Roger isn't raising the question.
You didn't wholly abandon it.
No, that's the key. I wouldn't consider that desertion problem.
No.
I think the key is that if you really intend to wholly abandon the child, then
you would not. I suppose I take the kid down on the street and I say, get out of this car. I'll send you $500 a month to Post Office Box 321 and I never want to see you again.
That's not wholly abandoning, in my definition.
What?
I wouldn't call that wholly abandoning the child.
Well, I think one of the key factors is this is instantaneous. The minute you drive off in your car with your 13-year-old kid standing on the block, you've committed this crime. If they can prove he intended to ban the support, you have to do that for 60 days before you have a bribe. Isn't that not true?
Well, not now, not really, although you usually have a 60-day situation. I mean, but the statute, the way it reads now, it's if you leave the state and for a period of 60 days, and during that 60-day period you fail to provide support, then you've got a prima facie case.
I see. Okay. Of abandonment. I see.
And as a practical matter, I think a lot of district attorney's offices use this as just a rule of thumb. Before they get into a criminal prosecution, they'll wait for a 60-day period, particularly if you don't know where the guy is, you know, before you issue a warrant for his arrest or something like that. Because at least then you've got probable cause, you know, to go ahead and arrest the guy. But
well, would you have anybody have any strenuous objections if we raise the 18? I mean, to me, it solved my problem.
Yeah, I'm not so sure though. What are we making this? Misdemeanor?
Yeah.
Well.
Probably, because in a lot of these instances, other sections would come into play. Reckless endangerment, for one, if the child was put in a situation where there's any threat to its physical.
Yes. Is that 8 that picks that up?
Reckless
I'm
endangerment.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's not in this article.
How about creating 2 degrees of crime?
One under 6?
One under, I'm not sure, maybe under 12, maybe.
And then one between 12 and 18.
You mean have a felony provision for the
no,
very
I'm
young
talking kid? About the... I think that's pretty darn serious when you just leave a little kid out here in the middle of the street and blow out on him, whereas I do agree that the kid that's over 12 years old, he's not going to starve to death. I mean, he's...
Well, apparently that's what Michigan was trying to get at, and I'd agree that Lee's suggestion's a heck of a lot better if that's the... They really want to have a wage statute and then just a standard abandonment statute. I can see that, but...
Maybe eight is reasonable.
You see, now you need, number one, you need an abandonment, which incidentally now includes wives. You need an abandonment plus without providing necessary and proper shelter, food, care, clothing for any of them, or, and this is the alternative way, or who without just sufficient cause fails or neglects to support them. So you got two different situations. You've got an abandonment without support, which is, I mean, you could theoretically, although I never saw this kind of a case, because they always get in, you know, everyone I ever saw was a non-support case, mm-hmm. but you couldn't have the abandonment under our present statute with support. I mean, provision had been made for support, even though you had a bug out situation, it was not abandonment because
Correct.
you've made allowance for that. It seems to me it's going to make more sense if we can split this off into two separate statutes, but. I think that...
Well, this is the immediate... This is just dropping the kid out in the street is what it really is. All right, I'll make that motion, Mr. Chairman.
On 8?
I mean, yeah, that...
The break date?
Well, that Section 5 be made... or that we have two crimes. One for...
One crime, 2 degrees?
Yeah. One for 8 years and one for 8 and above.
Under 8
and 8
and above.
To what age?
18.
What if you've got a 17-year-old daughter and she says, I want to get married, and you say, I don't want her to, and she says, well, I'm going to anyway. Are you abandoning her? Well, then what if she changes her mind?
You can't get married, can she, until she's 18 without your permission?
Well, it's a misdemeanor. I don't think it's that serious a problem.
I think abandonment. Act an action, not just a. If she says I'm leaving home and walks out, the fact you can't physically stop her, I don't think constitutes abandonment on your part, even though she's gone. But I think she walks off in a huff and you say, good luck. Then maybe you do.
Do we understand the motion then that will lead to split Section 5 into 2 degrees of abandonment? More serious degree would be the abandoning a child of less than 8 years of age, The lesser degree would be abandoning a child of 8 and but less than 18. 8 through 17, but I guess we say 8 or through less than 17. Well, however, less than 18, however you state that.
Well, yeah. Now, what do you want to do about this 60-day
as prima facie
situation?
Now, why is leaving the state significant?
Yeah.
We haven't got that in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is just a matter of retained from our present law.
No, I didn't want to ask. I didn't say where it came from. I said, why? Why do we, what's the significance of it?
Well, I don't know that it has a great deal of significance because if they were out of state and failed to provide support for 60 days, they'd be chargeable for criminal non-support anyway. If you didn't want to charge them this much.
Well, really, then, what they're saying here is that if a person commits the crime of abandonment and is also subject to being charged for criminal non-support, then it's prima facie evidence that he abandoned the child. Isn't that what the result would be? All they're saying is if you're going to get prima facie evidence, you've got to have leaving the state, no pay for 60 days, will constitute
prima facie case under
of abandonment.
Five.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you've got a case otherwise. I mean,
you've got
this. Just
do you really need that? What I worry about is, I think you can make a strong argument if this is going to be this is truly evidentiary. That's what abandonment means. Abandonment means, as you were pointing out to me, I think you can make a very strong argument that the legislature here says you've got a prima facie case if you can prove leaving the state and no support for 60 days. We're actually defining abandonment as leaving the state and not supporting the child. And I think it could be strongly argued that I didn't leave the state or 60 days hadn't gone by. So you can't prove a prima facie case. Do we really need Section 2?
Don, do you feel that the district attorneys have relied on that 60-day period quite a bit?
Yeah, but that's going after criminal non-support, not going after abandonment, though. Right?
Well, yeah, that's really the effect of it.
Well, then let's put 60 days into the criminal non-support.
No. I think just let the prosecutor use his discretion.
I thought we'd cited that venue section. You know, we talked about the
Well, God, I don't like that.
We'll come back to that. Venue can be laid.
Plus, you got a guy that's just a total irresponsible kind of a guy. He takes an 8-year-old kid out here and throws the kid out of the car and leaves him out in the street. And then 30 days later, he repents and he comes back.
They don't have a prima facie case of abandonment.
Yeah.
Well, where this also ties in, and here's the statute I was thinking of, 131.360, which is over in our procedural sections. It's a non-support action venue provision.
Oh.
And that's... That's another 60 days. So we could...
Let's take it out.
We could take it out of here because for venue purposes, you're going to have to have... You're going to have an actual residence of the wife or child in the county for 60 days during the non-support.
You want to...
Well, I understand the crime in subsection 1... You've got a prima facie case if you've proved that anyway. I don't care what you want to call it.
Yeah. I think if you walk away from an 8-year-old in downtown Salem and say goodbye, and I hope you grow up to be a fine young man, I don't think you need anything else to pretty well establish it. Okay, do you want to include in your motion, Lee, that we delete Section 2, or Paragraph 2? Okay, the motion before us now is to amend Section 5 by making it... A 2-degree crime.
That's Lee Johnson's string him up with the thumbs statute.
I'm sorry, that's Law and Order Johnson's approach to the program. and the deletion of paragraph 2. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. You're too
made it that time.
Okay.
Section 6, criminal non-support. First commits the crime of criminal non-support if, being a parent of a child born in or out of wedlock, lawful guardian or other person lawfully charged with the support of a child less than 18 years of age, he refuses or neglects without lawful excuse to provide support for such a child. And support is defined in Section 1 as including but not limited to necessary and proper shelter, food, clothing, medical attention, and education.
So we I've never even looked at the thing here. The Uniform Non-Support Act?
The Reciprocal Enforcement Support Act.
This
doesn't conflict with that at all.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I'm looking
at. And the only significant change in existing law is that we have excluded non-support of a spouse, which is in our present law. Meaning that there are adequate civil remedies for failing to support your wife.
Oh, the hell with that. I think we want the criminal sanction. It's a very important tool. It's part of the weakness I have right now is that we don't have criminal jurisdiction. A lot of it's child, but it's also alimony.
You want to include alimony?
Well,
not until you turn the divorce laws around and make a working wife responsible to alimony to the husband and for support. Lee, I wouldn't go for that.
It's really pretty rare where you get even now under our present statute, it's a pretty rare bird where you get a non-support criminal's action for non-support of a wife. Because ordinarily, some situations where you need to help the wife. She's a welfare case, or she's ill, or infirm, or something, unable to work.
Yeah, but welfare recovery, you got that.
Well?
Yeah, but now wait a minute. The point is, one of the biggest weaknesses in our welfare recovery operation is that we don't have criminal jurisdiction. It's a hell of a good way to cite the guy in.
Well, you do have your contempt proceedings on.
The only advantage it seems to me that it would give you, if you retain the non-support of a wife, would be to allow you to extradite a guy from another state who isn't supporting his wife. And do you really want to go that far?
She's on welfare.
Well. You've got to put him under a reciprocal action now before you can extradite him anyway. And I think it's the policy of most DAs that handle any support cases at all, that they always, if you got an out-of-state case, you always go through the reciprocal act first.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't work, then when it comes time to extradite, you're really going to examine your cases carefully and just extradite on your best cases anyhow, I think. I don't know how the Attorney General's office feels about this, whether you'd want to get into a policy of extraditing for alimony situations or not. I'd like to check on it a little bit.
I'd like to know how many welfare women you have with alimony. If it's not time support.
No, I know.
Find there are precious, precious few, because I don't know of any court here, since I've been practicing, that will give alimony, on welfare, to welfare recipients. In other words, require the husband who's absconding. Support, by the tons, but alimony,
Lane County, for example, has, for a number of years, had a very strong non-support department in the DA's office down there. I mean, they've always taken a pretty hard line on support cases. But even there, I think that, I know in 4 years I was there, I can't recall ever seeing a criminal non-support action brought for non-support of a wife. We did use the reciprocal act a couple of times where it was an aggravated case and, you knew where the guy was and you felt you could get some money out of him. But as far as trying to extradite a man back to the state of Oregon for not supporting his wife, we just felt that there are too many other cases involving small children that you know, you just don't have the facilities to...
Yeah, but the only thing is that there's a lot of talk about expanding resources in this thing, considerably. It is a really great problem.
Well, I agree, Lee, but I think...
Well, now look at it. Now look at it from this standpoint. Here's the aspect of it. The woman. Either she's going to... Suppose she hasn't got any children. But she's not able to work. She's going to be a welfare. She's going to be on welfare, receiving a dole from the state, or is she going to be paid by the guy that she has a rightful obligation to?
Now, wait a minute. See, there's the point. There are no children in the family, and they're married. Now, you've got to assume that the once the husband has picked this virgin flower, that he's destroyed her and taken her out of the workforce, and forever and ever, he's got a responsibility to support her, and that's where you and I part. I think the day they split the sheets, the day that he walks away from her, that's the day she goes back on her own. They cut up the pie, and then don't see that the husband has a continuing responsibility forever to keep the wife in clover. I realize that's the way Oregon law is, but I think it's not Oregon statutory law, it's Oregon case law, well, Oregon judicial law.
Wouldn't you advise most husbands who are threatened with the charge under this criminal non-support to immediately file divorce against their wife?
Yeah.
Well, if they're going to be threatened with criminal non-support for not supporting a wife, it seems to be the wisest thing to immediately...
Well, lawfully charged with support.
Divorce?
Lawfully charged with support, though.
Yeah, but it's a divorced wife who you've already divorced, but you have an alimony payment. We're talking about.
Yeah,
is
because...
Is alimony granted very often anymore?
If you've got a divorce and you don't have an alimony order and a divorce decree, you're not going to be able to get into your non-support section now because there isn't going to be any duty of support.
All right, I'm going to move stuff.
Okay, any comment?
No.
All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Passed. Number 7.
Section 7 restates some special rules of evidence and non-support in present law. 1. Proof that a child was born to a woman during the time a man lived and cohabited with her or held her out as his wife is prima facie evidence that he's the father of the child. 2. No provision of law prohibiting the disclosure of confidential communication between husband and wife apply to prosecutions for criminal non-support. Husband and wife is a competent and compellable witness for or against either party. This is the only area, existing Oregon law, where a wife is compellable, or spouses are compellable witnesses for or against each other.
Yeah, there's good reason for that.
Yeah, you need that. You need that.
Well, yeah, some of your time you have these women to cooperate.
That's right. Some of your welfare cases, there's a little collusion going on there oftentimes, and she doesn't want to testify against him. And you need to be able to bring her in for grand jury.
What doesn't this number one kind of fly in the face of the other presumption that two people are married, and I'm thinking of somebody, the other one that's in the not disputable, but irrefutable. What am I trying to think of? The presumptions that are irrefutable. Conclusive presumptions is that if you're married to each other and there is access, then the child is the husband's child. And doesn't this fly in the face of that? You have a conclusive presumption that A, the husband, who sometime at or about the time of conception may have had access to the child, to the woman, but she was, or at or about the time of conception, was cohabiting with another man. So you have a conclusive presumption that the husband is the father of the child, but here we're giving them a rebuttable presumption that B is the father of the child.
Well, in that case, of course, the conclusive presumption would prevail.
Would prevail.
Well, wait a minute. We may have it.
I didn't know that was a conclusive presumption, is it?
Sure. I think so. 41.
Yeah,
the child was born to a woman during the time of a man.
Those your kids singing downstairs, buddy?
Well, yeah, but if it's a conclusive presumption, it would
that would rebut the rebuttable presumption.
Yeah, that slams it shut.
Which but this is the case where they aren't husband and wife.
I think in cases where presumptions have equal weight, neither apply.
Oh, yeah. We got an O'Connell opinion on that one.
you have to have an O'Connell opinion.
I was going to say, I care not to get into that argument.
Well, it seems to me, doesn't that conclusive presumption require, say something about a man who is not impotent? Something, isn't that in there too? Or is it?
Well, too hard to find it here. The issue is 41.350 sub 6. The issue of a wife cohabiting with her husband, as you said, who is not impotent, is legitimate.
Is legitimate.
Well,
it would have to be the husband's child, or it would be a bastard.
Sure.
But I don't think that bothers that, huh?
No, and because our support section here covers children born in or out of wedlock.
Well, I think the answer is, if we're all satisfied with it, that if you have a strained fact situation, I grant you, that I set up, where the child is born, the woman is married, and the husband is not impotent, and you have the conclusive presumption that it's the woman's child, or the husband's child, then you don't even get into this, because this won't operate. The disputable, prima facie case can't overcome a conclusive presumption.
Well, I presume the non-support action would be brought against the husband, not the third party.
In the end. Okay. Well, they're on a collision course as long
as... The paramour's defense.
That's right. Keep that in mind, gentlemen.
Because of that presumption, the husband couldn't argue that he was not the foster child.
That's a peculiar one. I had a woman at one time in a legal aid case wanted to bring the paternity suit against a fellow who was the father of the child, and her husband was an inmate at an Oregon State Correctional Institution and was not impotent. No way. The law says the guy out in the funny farm is the husband.
Is the father.
The father, I mean, yeah.
He's not cohabiting.
No. There was...
Man, I'd be irritated on those circumstances.
She was cohabiting at or about the time, I guess, at the time. Of course, it doesn't say, cohabiting doesn't necessarily relate to the time of conception. A wife cohabiting with her husband who is not impotent is illegitimate, or is legitimate, excuse me. Oh, I don't, that's not the one I'm talking about. I was talking about paternity suit. Let me find that one. That's what I was talking about.
I move the adoption of the section.
Ken, you have anything to
add?
All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, pass.
I see where you mentioned your venue section. It's over on page 24. Yeah, you got it in there. Yeah, we weren't intending to recommend repeal of that venue statute. We felt that should remain the same. Which in effect means that that before you've got a non-support case, you're going to have a 60-day period lapse.
Really?
Yeah, I think this is of some advantage. I think it not only does it prevent useless or unnecessary prosecutions, but it also gives your DAs a way to sort through some of these cases, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you don't have to... because oftentimes you'll get an individual who wants, the guy's been gone since Friday night and it's Monday morning, you know, they want a complaint for his arrest. And,
correct the record, I was referring to 109110, it's not the evidence statute, but it's the one that says that to bring a paternity suit, the female must be unmarried. At least by an unmarried female, so a woman who gets pregnant and she's married,
cannot bring attorney suit. So that's the same fact that we've been deciding on today. I knew she was locked out somehow, but it's not because of the evidence. The presumption is the fact she was married. The statute excludes those that are married.
Useless piece of information.
Okay, let's go to 8.
Well, 8's a long one. It's about 2.5 pages.
Oh, man, is it a beauty. All right, I'll start by moving to strike subsection A.
This statute tries to, attempts to cover everything that the contributing delinquency statute covered that is not covered in all the other sections, particularly relating
well,
to sexual offenses
they
and
got,
prostitution.
They have a very severe remedy to apply to the situation which they apply, and that's withdrawing
subsection
the
A would be new to Oregon law. The remedy the Attorney General alludes to is the license revocation for allowing a minor to enter or remain on license.
It's a pretty
premises.
Strong deterrent. Let's don't fuss up the criminal code with more stuff than we need.
I'd be inclined to agree. I understand the Oregon Liquor Control Commission is even going out. They've got the American Legion by, I guess there's a restriction. You can't serve people that aren't guests of American Legion. And one of their OLCC boys just walked up there during a party. And they're, you know, hubbub and party in order to drink. They served and they showed them.
Is that right?
Oh, boy.
That's kind of reaching out, yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to go along. Ken, what do you feel about A?
Well, I agree with you. There's several sections here, too. I mean, I don't believe
I got some others.
I'm sure you have.
Yeah, there are a number here that we felt we ought to lay before you so you can make a decision on.
Yeah, why'd you have to lay it before you?
We don't need the disclaimer right now. You're all right.
Here we go.
Well, the section is quite long. I left a number of them out, which are in some supplementary commentary.
Don't tell us about the ones you left out.
Okay.
A's out.
Attorney General's move that A be deleted. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Like driver B.
I'll leave B in.
B is to knowingly induce, cause, or permit an unmarried person less than 18 to witness an act of sexual conduct or sadomasochistic abuse.
Masochistic.
Well, I've always had trouble with that word, but. You know what I mean, gentlemen.
I don't, and that's what I'm going to ask you. What is sadomasochistic?
Well, that is defined in the article on obscenity.
You've already approved it. I don't think Roger.
Torture,
I think Roger's too embarrassed
torture.
To go into it.
Torture flagellation.
No, I didn't come out of this subcommittee or obscenity.
It's
article.
Just dirty. That's all.
Dirty. Okay.
Would that include a? Watching a dirty movie?
Sure. Sexual conduct.
Yeah, but this isn't, we've got the movies pretty well covered in our obscenity article, but we don't have the live actor situation necessarily covered because unless it involves a performance before an audience, and we've got thinking, well, you know, if you've got a situation where it's not a play or where you've got an audience, you may...
What if I left my kids over Woodstock? Like Tenino or whatever.
Well, if you knew at the time that this kind of a thing was going to take place, you might violate this section.
Well, that doesn't offend me.
Suppose I take my kid to the watch the play here.
Take the kid up to the monk's cage and
put on something. Oh, well. I'll leave that with it.
Well,
I'm a little trouble with C.
Well, let's see if Ken is satisfied with B. Are you all right on that one?
Yeah.
All
right. I'm a little trouble with C.
C is the same thing, except it's enter, remain, or place where unlawful narcotic or dangerous drug activity is maintained or conducted. I had a thought on that section after this was printed, and I don't know what the situation would be where you have a party of 20 or 30 people, and a 16-year-old wanders in, and they all know he's there, and they all know he's 16, and they all permit him to remain. It would seem that under this section, they would all be guilty.
Well, let me check something about your language, Roger. As I read it, he knowingly permits a person less than 18 years of age to enter and remain in a place where it happens that unlawful narcotic or dangerous activity is maintained. Shouldn't it be where he knows that the unlawful narcotic or dangerous activity is going to be maintained or conducted?
What was that?
Well,
the last part, I got up after the last.
What I'm questioning, I think it should read this way, that it would read, it should read, you'd strike the word knowingly where it presently exists and put it over.
I see.
Where he knowingly, well, he has to know that the unlawful narcotic or dangerous activity is being maintained or conducted.
Well, now, what's this designed to get? Because the one using, in other words, you take a child into a opium den, let us say. Now, if you're using opium, you're guilty of a much more severe crime of using opium, if you're possessing it or whatever. This is just where you take the child in and show him an opium den.
Then. Well, if you allow him to enter, remain.
All right, isn't the child? I mean, but
suppose you take out a 17-year-old girl, you go to a party, mm-hmm. and they start smoking pot. You're not smoking pot. You don't even approve of it.
Are you in possession of it?
No, you're not in possession of it.
You're endangering
some of the people there are smoking mm-hmm. pot.
Then you'd be guilty of endangering welfare of the minor.
Yeah, you'd be guilty under this section.
You'd be guilty.
As I say, there are a lot of policy questions in these subsections.
It's a little
tough. Whether you feel that would manifestly tend to corrupt the
minor.
Well, that's what you're getting at.
This is just a contributing statute and in specific language.
Well, okay, I think you've got to. All right, I think the section is all right if it reads.
But knowingly has to be that, because it should never modify permit.
He permits a person less than 18 years of age to enter or remain in the place where unlawful.
Well, knowing a place where, or in a place, knowing that unlawful narcotic or dangerous drug activity is maintained.
Knowing that, knowing that. Well, I would. Yeah.
Now, wherever we use knowingly in these statutes,
strike the word where, and you'd strike the word where and put the words knowing that, right?
Yeah.
And you strike the word knowingly.
Yeah. Knowingly, of course, was intended to qualify both the.
Well, I figured that, but I don't think it does.
Isn't it implicit in the word permit?
Well, here's what I'm trying to point out. Knowingly is a term of culpability that we've defined in our article on culpability. So whenever we use knowingly, we mean a certain thing, and that's defined as knowingly or with knowledge when used with respect to conduct or to a circumstance described by a statute defining a crime means that a person acts with an awareness that his conduct is of a nature so described or that a circumstance so described exists.
So
I'll buy it.
All right, C's all right with me. I'll go along with C.
Okay, C's all right. We won't make any amendments on it. Will you add something in the commentary reminding us that knowingly is a word of art indicating, because I don't see how you could unknowingly permit anything.
Yeah, I had one further question in my mind. Subsection C was also in subsection A, but we deleted that. And that's on the word enter. Now these other, the models that we've used have used both terms, enter or remain. But what we're really talking about, isn't it, to allow someone to remain in this environment. Do you think it should be criminal per se just to allow them to enter? In other words, the crime is committed once they enter.
Well, you still, he enters knowing the place to be in this circumstance.
I think so.
You mean that implies the knowledge is in advance to the entry?
Yeah, right. If I accept your definition of knowingly, that's the way I understand it.
I think it should be.
Whereas the remains takes care of the case that I stated earlier, where you know,
start lighting up.
Subsection D is knowingly induce, cause, or permit a person less than 21 years of age to participate in unlawful gambling activity.
That's the law, man.
Well, yes, it is. We have a statute on allowing a minor to gamble, but it also conforms to the regulatory code on paramutual gambling.
Yeah, but that's not unlawful gambling.
No.
Paramutual is not unlawful gambling.
No, it's unlawful on the other side. It's unlawful for them to allow.
I'd change it to 18 years.
Well, we got the paramutual problem, though. They can't gamble on paramutual until they're 21. So you have the problem of, I was inclined to go with 18, too. If anybody.
Well, no, but it doesn't make any difference. It permits a person less than 21 years of age to participate.
Yeah, all right. Let's suppose you change that to 18. Then you can encourage a child to go out and bet on the horses and you're not committing any crime.
Right? God, that really bugs me in a way.
Well, of course, the paramutual still can't allow him to do it. You're just not guilty of the crime.
Suppose I give my kid $2 and tell him to go down and place a bet on so-and-so on the nose. You know?
You don't do that.
You don't do it. That's right. All right. I don't care.
What do you feel about Ken about dropping it to 18? Would leave a hole.
I think it should stay 21.
Okay.
We've got it right. Doesn't make that much difference.
Uh-uh. Interesting in the little paradoxes we have. However,
yeah.
Flipping. Of course, this is the what's going to. If this 18-year-old, 19-year-old thing passes, then I hope that somehow we can go back and amend a few of these things. Because I'd like booze and driving and a lot of the things get down to 19, because we do have this. If you allow her to, in other words, it's, if she's 19, you can take her into a place where she's smoking pot, but you can't let her take a $2 bet.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you should reach an age where there should be some certainty in the law.
As soon as they get hit 18, then they're fair game. Okay, what's nobody? We'll leave it at 21, knowing it's a little inconsistent.
All right, let's review. Let's direct to the staff that if the 19-year-old votes change, we'll
alert us at least
to
all the changes. Right. Wouldn't that be fun?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, this next one really bothers me.
Section E. This is the furnishing alcoholic beverages to a person under 21 years of age.
That's substantially the present law.
Present law. It accepts the parent or lawful guardian if it doesn't occur in license.
I'm going to move and strike this section.
Holy.
Why? Well, all right. Under this section, I'm in violation of the code of children or juveniles coming into my house and I serve them a bottle of beer.
Well, of course, in most instances, that probably wouldn't be harmful, but of course, a lot of the cases that come up, usually involving perhaps sexual advances, that's just about how they do come about. They invite juveniles in their home and give them beer.
Yeah, or you get a traffic situation. Your car piles up and kids are drunk and you find out where'd you get the booze. And, well, we got over at George's house and maybe George's dad, if he wants to give his own kid, of course he can, even with your own child in your own house, there's a limit to it. I mean, if you do this to the point at which maybe the child is going to become endangered in some way, or his welfare is going to, you may get into some other area here, and some other crime might be committed.
In the first place, you load them up with booze, and you're probably subjecting yourself to some civil liability.
But you see, one of the things too, oftentimes now these liquor cases were in the past prosecuted under your contrib statute, which ain't no more. And so you're not going to be able to get to it with a CTDM prosecution. So now you may have, as far as what you do with your own kid, maybe you want that broader.
I know what you're saying, Lee, but I...
Well, this is something that people... The problem is that most people know today
what the law is on this, and they know they're violating it.
Yeah, and, but I think there are people that worry about that, that worry that the 18-year-old is going to have a bunch of the boys over, and he says, Mom, can I raid the refrigerator and get beer or get the hard stuff? It seemed to me that it would be comfortable for the parents to say, no, you can't. The law.
Yeah, or you get into a situation too where it's a maybe a homosexual involved, where he gets some young guys over and gets them boozed up, you see, preparatory to making some kind of sexual advances.
Well, I think the thing's going to cure itself as soon as we get down to 18, because I think if we could substitute the word the number 18 right there, I think it would end Lee's problem. I don't think you ought to be feeding a 16-year-old kid beer and wine and sort of stuff. The problem is when they're 19 and 20, it gets kind of silly.
Particularly when they're in uniform.
And uniform, yeah, with battle ribbons.
Well, they're bigger than you are.
Yeah.
Give me the bottle, man.
Well, yeah, and of course, you're not going to cure. You know, the things that go on, those kind of situations are going to continue to occur, no doubt. I mean, the relatively innocent kind of situations where maybe you've got an 18-year-old boy and it's okay with you if he has a drink in your house and he's got a buddy there, and, you know, and you make sure, you know, well, it's, you know him, or they're friends of the family or something, and you know it's okay if he has a cocktail in your house or something like that. I mean, those aren't going to get prosecuted anyway, you know, I wouldn't think, but... Any more so than they are right now, in their presence. Because this is existing statute, really, isn't it, Roger?
Yes.
You haven't even changed any of the words, have you?
No.
Well, I don't know. There's an awful lot of problems are raised by it.
The only cases brought under the statute are aggravated cases, and in the case of licensed premises, criminal charges are rarely ever brought. They get them through their license.
I suppose it's the 21 years that bothers me.
Yeah, I think that if we could go to 19 or 18, it would solve all my problems.
Yeah, because for that matter, you see, under your contrib statute, those were 18-year-olds or under. You know, you had to be to get into your contrib situation.
I wonder if we ought to just do that anyway.
I mean, drop this down?
I don't see any reason why we couldn't drop this down to 19 anyway. I mean, under this thing.
You want to get that controversial?
What, on this?
No, I'm just wondering if maybe we ought to... We're all thinking about, or at least my thinking is, waiting till the vote gets down and then catch up. The crimes equal the vote. Maybe the crimes on leave. Maybe we ought to establish majority as far as criminal law is concerned. We have as far as sex is concerned and drugs and everything else. Maybe we ought to do it with gambling and...
Well, now, if you do this, if you do it here, then you'd probably want to change the counterpart statute if we... I mean, now we have a statute minor in possession.
Yeah.
And you'd want to change that also. I mean, it's...
Well, you would have to make it clear that we're not talking about licensed premises, because...
No, I'm talking about the whole thing.
Well, you're talking about changing everything. In other words, recommending a change to allow...
Making an 18-year-old a citizen.
Well, then amendments would have to be made in the regulatory code to protect their licenses.
Well, I don't even think we have to go that far, Wally. We have the liquor regulatory statute. The question is here... Under E is whether you're going to hold these people criminally liable.
Well, and then we're talking about the kids coming by, too. You know, the non-licensee.
You could lower the age and just limit it to off-license premises and let the liquor control board run their license premises.
They've never charged with a crime. Has anyone ever been charged, any liquor licensee been charged with a crime after losing his license? Has the DA then gone in charge?
Well, this primarily, I mean, that's what I'm getting at, is this thing primarily governs the, well, as to the sale, it governs the guy who sells some booze to him, but I just don't see anything
Yeah, there have been prosecutions of tavern owners under this statute.
Have there?
Yes, there have been. Yeah. In fact, well, there are a couple of Oregon cases that say, you know, that this is a strict liability offense.
Why don't we do this? If you wouldn't mind, rather, I think this, I can't see Chandler and Knight and some of our more conservative members ever buying this. Would you mind doing me a favor and one of you in noting these and giving me a list, and maybe I'll just introduce a bill in the session that will amend the amended bill, and we can take it on that rather than screwing up the criminal code. We can take the issue of when's an adult on its own ground and not nail this one. Leave this one on Luke 21 and leave the inconsistencies, and then we'll attack the other one on a head on the question of when do you become mature.
Okay, subsection F. Okay. You put a period, the word age, at the word age. The rest of it's surplus age.
Yeah, this is the sale of tobacco to any form of person less than 18. This is existing law.
We got an opposed amendment. Mr. Johnson moves that it's less than 18 years of age, period. And that brings the parents and guardians in to.
But this only involves sale, so even by taking out the exception, the parent could still give their children.
Well, I guess at least gets the parent out of the tobacco business. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any disagreement on that amendment? Okay, so moved. And so passed. Okay, any other problems with F? G.
Potentially marks the body of a person less than 18 years of age with indelible ink or pigments by means of tattooing device. This is a New York statute.
Can you get a tattoo in Oregon?
Yes, it's legal in Oregon.
No, but can you get one? I don't know what it's legal was. Can you get one? Can everybody get a tattoo?
Or in Portland. I don't know if they're in Salem.
I've seen them in Portland.
Skid Row area, there's a couple. I included it just because from what I read on tattooing, it seems to pose quite a few health hazards.
This would be for himself. I used to have some pretty tough kids that sat next to me in class. They used to take jackknives and cut their initials in their wrists and stuff like this and fill it with indelible ink, which makes, I'm sure they still have their tattoo.
Sure.
They've said some pretty nasty things on their own wrists, too, if I recall correctly. This would, the body of a person would include person, your own person.
Well,
I suppose it would. That would
suppose it would.
If you would read that, I would. For adding the word marks the body of a person other than himself or another person.
Why?
Well, I don't think it should be a crime to tattoo yourself.
Well, if it's bad for you to do it to me, it'd be bad for you to do it to yourself.
There's some logic in that.
I was waiting for Roger to answer.
I just don't think that can be controlled.
Why don't you just say it another person?
Oregon is one of the few states left to legalize tattooing.
Oh, thereby by another, is that grammatically and syntactically?
Well, you could just say that marks the body of another and just take out person.
Would a all right, let's suppose now that my buddy I went to grade school with is now making marks on me with a jackknife and indelible ink. Is that a tattooing device? Probably not.
Probably not.
Man, I probably shouldn't.
I don't know. It's kind of a Mickey Mouse section, really. What comes right down to it.
It's no vast problem in the state of Oregon.
You know,
have to use
really. This
he'd have to use the ink.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we ought to recommend that somebody placed in the health code about this or something like that.
Use a clean knife.
You think?
My God.
It would only, I think, in reading it, apply to tattoo parlors, and there's probably only four in the state of Oregon. I think two in Portland, maybe one in Eugene or something like that.
One in Coos Bay.
So there's only four men in the state. is going to apply.
We can write them a letter.
Well, we could limit it. We could say that they're not allowed to tattoo the words "born to lose." Yeah. Because everybody I've ever seen with that on him, you know.
Did.
Yeah,
he sure was.
All is taken.
I sense the feeling of the committee is delete G. Any disagreement? So ordered. H.
No one who sells or furnishes to a person less than 18 without written consent of parent or lawful guardian, bulk gunpowder, dynamite, blasting caps, or nitroglycerin. Yeah, that's a restatement of present.
Isn't that somewhere else? Or is this the only place we can...
Well, this would repeal Lightning Roger.
166-480, which covers both explosives and firearms to children under the age of 14. Now, in the firearms article, we raised that age to 17. You can't sell.
This is about all this kind of thing.
Be 17 without consent of their parents. But we haven't included this provision in the firearms article.
Well, that's where it belongs.
Well, that's the bulk gunpowder, but... Well, I suppose the rest of it could go there, too. But.
Yeah, we could move it over. We could move it over to the other article without hurting it.
Yeah.
So moved.
I don't know. This is, honey, I just think you're getting kind of some pretty wild areas here.
Well, hold on. We got some more coming up.
Well, yeah.
You know, I found out. You know, my boy is at school. You know, they're setting off these rockets, and you have to get a permit for the fire marshal. Do that.
Well, I think that would stop that. We had a boy in the community college here blew off both hands.
Well, I mean, it's very carefully controlled. I found I can't qualify for a permit. I have no experience with rockets. No, I mean, he does it at school. It has to be under the supervision. The guy has to have a permit to do it. Huh. That's my question, where all this kind of stuff shouldn't be put under the fire code or something like that.
Well,
I think this is put in there for a couple of very close friends of mine that blew up the streetcar house up in Council Crest. Fortunately, I wasn't in town at the time.
Otherwise, you would have been the fuse man. Yeah.
Well, what we can do, now the firearms article, you see, hasn't been approved by the subcommittee yet, so we can move it over to that and let them decide whether they want to keep it in there.
Okay, move.
Okay.
Move that.
Should move. Two.
What in the...
Well, the two refers back to subsection 1A, which has been deleted. This restates an existing statute that if a minor is going to entertain or dance in a place where alcoholic beverages are served, they have to get permission of the county juvenile judge and their parents to do so. And so it's framed here as an exception to the subsection 1A.
Well, it also applies to E.
No.
No, because there you're giving them alcohol.
Well, this is where the go-go thing slipped in.
Yes, I believe it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
well, now that we leave that elsewhere, this is an exception, so if we take out the crime, then the exception ought to come out. Should it not?
Well, I'd have to check on it to see what its status is in regard to the liquor control regulations.
Well, maybe this amendatory language ought to go into the liquor control and say that, yeah.
As long as it wouldn't endanger their license to have minor entertainers, then we don't need this.
I see. So move. I move to strike subsection 3.
Okay, wait just a minute. On 2, the motion of Mr. Johnson is to delete it and instruct the staff to ascertain whether or not it should be added to a part of the liquor code.
You may strike subsection 3.
All those in favor indicate by on 2. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed nay. Carried. Now what, Mr. 3, Mr. Johnson, Mr. 3.
Well, that's a restatement of an existing statute. And the situation is here that most small town, at least, pool halls are also are part of taverns where liquor is sold. And so that this statute makes an exception that if these conditions are complied with, minors are allowed to play pool in these places.
Rise and repeat. Pool.
Well, but shouldn't that be part of the Liquor Control Commission?
It's in our criminal code
well,
now.
The question is not so much whether it ought to be a crime apart from being a liquor violation, a license violation. It's just a question. It's not a question whether we move it back and forth. It's a question whether, in addition to getting your license pulled, whether you can be charged with a crime for doing it. Isn't that really the question?
Yeah, but of course we deleted the crime of allowing somebody to remain on the premises where alcoholic beverages are served. So
we want to say it's a serving of beverages.
Now, but what did this apply to now, yeah. Roger? Under the existing law, I mean this exception, what did it relate to?
Well, it related to A, where you couldn't have a child on the premises where liquor is being served.
This would have to go the same route that the other one did. That we have no, if we eliminate this, we have no crime for a child to be in a pool hall. The only crime is the guy will lose his license unless he qualifies under this exception.
Well, this statute, one.
Well, the way they grant those licenses, you got the same problem in Shakey's Pizza Parlor and every other darn place. And I don't want to jam up the criminal code with this stuff. It's a licensing problem.
Right, I agree.
Well, yeah, I agree too. The only thing, we just didn't want to write out of the code some protection for these guys. It's in there now.
All right, but yeah. Wouldn't we...
But there's no crime in it now.
Wouldn't we make sure...
We eliminated the crime.
No, yeah, it's no crime, so the only thing that protects
you... No crime
for
you get to be on the premises.
Mm-hmm. And that's only...
It's a crime to serving.
Well, it is a crime now, under 167.
No, but when this goes into law, it won't be a crime for a kid to be on a tavern premises at all.
Right.
It'll cost the tavern owner his license. Disturbing or let him be around unless he fits into one of these exceptions.
Well, that was my question. Was that the only thing it applied to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let me read the statute. No, it applies to a lot of things. Any person being owner, lessee, proprietor, or employer of any cigar store, public card room, saloon, ballroom, etc., etc., who permits any minor to engage therein in any game of cards, billiards, pool, bagatelle, dice throwing or other game of chance, etc., is guilty of this crime. But then it makes this exception, and that's what this is. Except that if pool rooms that comply with this are not covered under that penal statute, it has a maximum $100 fine.
What's bagatelle? Do you know what bagatelle is?
Chairman, I move
a dice game.
Is it?
I don't know exactly.
I move the striking in that section. Can we go home now?
No, we have one or two other things to do.
Can we make it quick? I would like
to. Yep, we'll make it quick. Ken, do you have any other thoughts?
No.
All right, it's been moved that we strike section 3, and I would ask that the staff...
Freedom on the pool halls!
Right. There's trouble in River City, folks.
Well...
Starts with P, rhymes with P. Called pools.
Now, on page 34, Mr. Chairman, under the supplemental commentary, you may want to discuss some of these... on page 34.
The ones that you didn't put in?
Yeah, right.
Okay, let me get rid of 3. Those in favor of deleting 3 indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Carried. Excuse me, Don. All right, let's run down here. These are some things that are laws now that we're not adopting, right? Under this code, is that the way
I... You better take a look at that abortion bill.
It has some problems, I think. The question, though, was, and we've had a similar situation, I think, with abortion as we had with with the narcotics laws, and that is that the legislature just finished taking a long, hard look at this area.
Yeah, but you take a poll. It'll be interesting. You take a poll.
They'll go all the way.
Okay, yeah, well.
I don't know that you want to. It's one of these
time
political things.
Change.
Well, that's the thing. Does the commission want to
I
go
think
on
with
record
abortion,
as...
I think with abortion we ought to do it right.
Yeah, let's poll them. I think the answer is going to be go. Because remember when we did it, we were the only country in the state, you know, we're going to be the abortion capital of the world, the whole bit, and now all our neighbors are going to do
every
it before we do.
Every politician's trying to jump on that, maybe.
Yeah. It's, I think we might as well... Well, I think that the full committee ought to, the commission ought to decide, but unlike narcotics, where we have not yet heard, in my judgment, a better approach, our sister state to the north is going to have it on referendum, and Hawaii passed it. So it would seem to me that perhaps we could make a shot at it if the full commission. But I think there is a difference. My point being, there's a difference between the feeling of the commission on abortions as there would be on narcotics. And I think we ought to do the same thing we did on narcotics, and that's poll them to see whether they want to make a change. The decision was no.
It'd be very interesting to. I'll be very interested in that poll when you do the full commission. I sat on that thing in the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Do you agree or disagree with my observation?
Oh, I think it'll pass, but there's a couple of fairly high-ranking fellows on this commission that were certainly opposed to it. Decision.
They don't sit up these two seats here.
Just happened to be.
I see. All right. Well, I see your reluctance, Don, but...
I think I'll be brought up.
I think so.
I do, too.
I do, too.
I agree. I haven't changed my mind on how I stood.
Present law. Adultery?
We're going to appeal it.
That's just for informational purposes.
Marriage?
That's already been done. We're not repealing marriage, but...
Some people suspect we are, by the way. According to the mail, I guess.
We don't have... Oh, you mentioned this one is on the solemnizing of a marriage.
Yeah, I don't think this...
You should have been on that.
Yeah, you did.
At the bottom of the page, there is an existing statute that prohibits promoting divorce. And we haven't retained that.
Maybe you'll think we'll have a criminal statute on that.
Well, sure hadn't helped.
Well,
third in the nation. We're doing pretty well promoting them with the laws.
I think that was drafted.
Are we third in the nation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but guess behind what per capita?
What?
Behind Arizona and New Mexico. Third in divorce. These are 1967 figures, but that's the latest we have. Per capita, we're ahead of Nevada, California, on.
Idaho?
No, Arizona and New Mexico.
These are sections you're just going to eliminate if we don't do something
third,
about, right?
First in bankruptcy. Within the top
are these
going to
be eliminated if we don't do something about?
These would be repealed with no comparable
no
thing retained.
Yeah. On a per capita basis, we're still small population. In fact, I think the figures show that we hold our car longer than we hold our wives.
Underminers, now you've got some others, underminers.
So far you've gone great.
Yeah, those first three sections underminers are not covered.
All of these you can...
And these
got them under the juvenile code anyway.
These are statutes penalize the minor.
Yeah. Do we get them in the juvenile code? Lee makes that pronouncement and assumes that I know what the juvenile code says, and I don't.
Well, 167-250, for example, that wouldn't, I don't think, cover
well,
the
juvenile
code.
Well, juvenile, under the juvenile code, it's delinquency, okay?
Oh, is it the delinquency because it violates 167-250, or is it just delinquency? Delinquency,
that I just didn't know, right?
Why didn't you cover those?
Which one? All three of them?
Oh, well, pick one.
166.560.
That
was the first time that I was one of two no votes on the House floor on that statute.
On which one's that?
166.560. I thought, gosh, am I that far wrong?
That will be continued in an article on miscellaneous offenses.
What, 166.560?
Yes.
Why?
Well, the staff decided that it was a good...
What's that?
Probably says abandoning children.
Refrigerators in places accessible to children.
Oh,
I agree, Lee. Doggone it, I think you... I mean, I disagree with you and I agree with the statute. I know, of course, I think we ought to have a law about abandoning refrigerators, period, and all other junk and cars.
Well, yeah. Of course, and this was, you know, at one time, this was really a hot issue, and the only thing was that we felt that we'd probably have it covered under our recklessly endangering. But on the other hand, people might feel more secure if we had a specific statute.
Oh, where is recklessly endangering? It's not under Section 8.
No, that's not in this draft. That's under assault.
Oh. Is that where that problem I had about leaving the kids in the car would come?
Yeah.
Chairman, can I be excused?
Did I do it pretty quick, Mr. Chairman? I'm due home.
Okay, any other things here? Yeah, we'll get back to that. Anything else here?
Well, the bottom of page 35, that makes it a crime for a person over the age of 21 to fail to support their parents. We haven't retained that in the non-support area.
Why not?
Well, in the first place, I don't think it's ever used, or so rarely used. It's cluttered up the code.
Relative responsibility.
There are civil.
Besides that, you've got remedies under your welfare provisions give to these people. I mean, that's where you're going to get into it.
The border control stuff, all the stuff. Yeah.
I mean, you got civil remedies.
Okay.
To get support orders and things.
I doubt it. Yeah, I'll go along with that one.
Okay. Well, if there's nothing else, no, wait a minute. We've got we've got sections one.
And
section two.
What? That's all.
And the rest is section 8.
Oh. I'll move them all at once.
1, 2, and 8.
Right.
Okay, all those in favor of the adoption of sections 1, 2, and 8? Answer by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye, those opposed nay. Carried. That should do it. Do you want to approve it? Just approve. Mr. Johnson moves approval, adoption of Benson against the family.
All sections as amended.
All the sections as amended. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Those opposed nay. Carried.
Now, I said this once before, but I really mean it this time.
Yeah. At least you know you're going to meet.
This is your last article in the substantive code.
Hey, when's the big meeting?
The 18th and 19th.
You did it to me, didn't you?
Well,